This episode is sponsored by IM8. When it comes to looking after my health, one of the biggest battles I have is consistency. But the truth is, the easier something is to build into your day, the more likely you are to stick with it. That's one of the reasons I've kept using IM8's Daily Ultimate Essentials. It's a powder drink supplement co-founded by David Beckham and built by leading doctors and researchers. IM8 combines 16 supplements to support your body across 9 major organ systems, all in one drink. It feels good to know I'm doing something positive for my health every day without making it another thing to think about. And that's really the key, isn't it? You don't see the benefits from trying something once and hoping for the best. The real difference comes from turning it into a habit, and that's what IM8 has made so easy. In fact, a clinical trial conducted by the San Francisco Research Institute reported that 95% of people who tried IM8 for 12 weeks felt more energy. So if you're anything like me and know that consistency is often the hardest part, IM8 is definitely worth checking out. Go to im8health.com/nation right now or click on the link in the description and use the code NATION for a free welcome kit, 5 free travel sachets, plus 10% off your order. That's code NATION at im8health.com/nation. Code NATION at im8health.com/nation. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. This episode is sponsored by Indeed. Building a great team is never easy. If you're a small business, hoping the right people see your job posting isn't the best growth strategy. When the pressure's on and you need the right hire, this is a job for sponsored jobs. Indeed Sponsored Jobs gets you quality candidates when you need them most. Because when you're hiring, you don't just want more applicants, you want the right applicants. Sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed are 95% more likely to report a hire than non-sponsored jobs. That's because it helps you reach candidates that meet your specific criteria, such as skills, certifications, or location from the word go, boosting your job post in search results so you can reach the people that help your business thrive. So spend less time searching and more time actually interviewing candidates who check all of your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. When you need the right person to cut through the chaos, this is a job for Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? This is a job for Indeed Sponsored Jobs. This episode is sponsored by Honda. Since its first Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix, Honda has always taken what's learned on the track and used it to build better cars for everyone. From pushing limits in F1 to engineering the next generation of hybrids like the Prelude Hybrid and Civic Sedan Hybrid, Honda proves that racing doesn't just inspire innovation, it drives it. And that idea of taking lessons from the racetrack and applying them to road cars has always been a part of Honda's DNA. Decades of engineering in the demanding world of Formula One have helped shape the performance and efficiency you see in Honda's road cars today. And now that same thinking is shaping the next generation of hybrids as well. Cars like the 2026 Prelude Hybrid and Civic Hybrid show that electrification can be both efficient and genuinely fun to drive. The 2026 Prelude Hybrid and Civic Sedan Hybrid are engineered for fun. From the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Prelude and Civic and the latest innovations at Honda.com.
And it bodes really well for the rest of the year, doesn't it? Even if you've got the Mercedes guys and Lewis with the advantage. That's the threat, isn't it? That Max can beat them. That both McLarens can get in front. That Charles and Lewis can be there. It's not just Mercedes walkovers now.
Had the championship started 4 races ago, and everybody was where they were with their cars, the top 6 in the championship would be covered by 9 points. That is how even it has been over the last 4 races.
If Aston can even climb above 10th, it'll be an incredible recovery, given where they've been at.
Hello and welcome to F1 Nation. We're back after the summer break and it's finally race week again. F1 returns this weekend with the Dutch Grand Prix at Zandvoort, which also features the fifth F1 sprint of the season. My name's Tom Clarkson, and also returning are my F1 Nation teammates, former F1 driver Jolyon Palmer and IndyCar race winner James Hinchcliffe. Welcome back, guys. How was the break? Did you even get a break? And I'm really looking at you, Hinch, when I say that.
less than you guys, I believe. But I got one weekend off, which was nice. Spent that back home in Canada with some family, and otherwise still been working IndyCar races, and the marathon stint in the summer continues.
Well, it never stops for you. What about you, JP?
Yeah, it does stop for me. It's been really nice. I've been honing my paddle skills. I've seen a beach or two. It's been great. I'm just not the aficionado of motorsport, the Hinches. I feel bad every time when we come back and Hinch is still grinding it out through the summer break.
You love it, don't you, Hinch?
Just can't keep me away from the track.
Well, look, let's look at the title fight, because here's how we stand with 12 races to go. Kimi Antonelli leads on 219 points. Lewis Hamilton is 50 behind in second, with George Russell a further 9 points adrift in third. Let's discuss the top three. Kimi first, 6 wins for the season so far, and he's now 2 wins clear of Hamilton at the top of the standings. Guys, what has been the most impressive aspect of his campaign so far?
Right. For me, it's two things. It's speed and consistency. So we sort of knew from last year, especially at the end of the year, that he had flashes of that speed that we were expecting him to have. But he took quite a long time to actually show it last year. But this year, he has been quick, and he has just constantly been quick. I think there's barely been a weekend where he's not been a threat at the top. So to do that on such a regular basis with a bit of championship pressure, that for me is the outright pace.
Yeah, I kind of echo it. You knew the pace was inherently there. We've seen that his entire career. We saw flashes of it last year. But for me, it's all these different scenarios that he's been placed in. You know, once he kind of got to the top, he's won races in a litany of different ways. I think his racecraft has proven to be quite spectacular, and that's maybe not something we saw as much of last year. And it's, to Julian's point, the consistency with which he's been able to perform at the level that he's performing, I think has been the surprise. George was kind of Mr. Consistency last year. The Mercedes wasn't the best, but you always kind of felt like every week he got the most out of it, and then maybe a position or two on top of that. This year, Kimi's kind of doing that, but it's in a car that's incredibly dominant. And like you say, you throw on that pressure, that added expectation now of leading the championship and being in a championship potential situation. And he's been, dare I say, flawless, short of FP3 in Australia.
I mean, you say flawless. Is there a part of Kimi's armory that still needs a bit of work? And I'm thinking of yellow flags, Austria, even Hungary.
Maybe. I mean, we're really nitpicking. You're right. The Hungary qualifying one, I just thought was a little bit sloppy, where maybe he's showing he's still so new to it, isn't he? And he's showing that he's not a rookie, but he's still 19. His lack of experience, I think, in Austria and then Hungary. Hungary trying to do something that he saw George do, but not at the right time. So if we want to nitpick, we can. He's not, 100% of it, but he is more than 9 out of 10, isn't he? He's still so young, and that's the thing. When he's this composed, generally, maybe a little bit of rule book stuff, maybe the absolute last details, but the composure's there, the racecraft is great. I think so much of that, you get confidence from having the underlying pace, so you feel like you get a few chances at it. You know that you've got a chance to come past people. You know that you've got a chance to make up for races that maybe would get away from you. I think maybe you're nitpicking the last 1% there, TC.
Hey, it's all about 100% where I sit, right? Look, how does he need to approach then the second half of the year, right? This is now the business end. With every race that goes past, we're going to be one step closer to finding out who the world champion is going to be. I mean, Hinch, is there any change in approach that's needed?
No, certainly not. And I think he should be encouraged to not change a single thing. You know, coming out the summer break, he's the odds on favorite for the title, but you don't want to have that expectation, you know, really sitting over your head. You want to try to ignore that as best you can. Don't change your approach to the weekends. Don't start driving cautious. I mean, we've seen that's when, you know, championship leads can fall apart, when you start trying to protect them. He's got the car, he's got the team, he's got the ability. Just keep doing what he's doing, and, you know, he'll be a world champion by the end of the year.
His buffer allows him to do that. I think when you're fighting for a title and you have 25 points, even we saw Oscar just nip over 30 points last year, and you start to think, okay, there's a little bit, but you're only one race away from that being on the cusp of that magic 25 points. I think with Kimi having 50, that is a buffer to relax a little bit, and not to say relax and be sloppy, but relax and drive as he normally would, and drive as he's been doing, without feeling the need to tense up. Because if he finishes third one day, he finishes third one day. He's got the buffer, and again, with that pace, it is right now difficult to see how he will be overturned, but we saw last year how it can go wrong.
I wonder if Toto Wolff is worried about the approach. I mean, we're going to talk about Monza in a couple of weeks' time, obviously, but it came out in Hungary that, you know, Toto is thinking, look, we're probably going to have to take some power unit penalties at some point in the second half of the year. We're thinking about taking them at Monza, Kimi's home race, because it takes the pressure off if he's starting further back. And maybe I'm overthinking it, but I get it's Toto trying to protect him. But in everything that you guys have said so far, he needs no protection.
What I find interesting about that scenario is that Toto said in his quote, yeah, we're going to consult Marco Antonelli about it, his dad. And I thought to myself, why on earth is the driver's father having an input on power unit penalties? But it could be for that reason, right? Maybe he's like, do you think this will help Kimi's approach to the weekend, knowing he's going in on the back foot and that takes a bit of the expectation away and the pressure off? But I thought that was a very telling comment.
It'll be interesting when we get there, because you've got the decision here, right? So you've got Kimi's home race, the one with the most pressure, but Mercedes should have a good pace advantage when we get to Monza. So does Kimi just say, we'll start from pole, I'll take the penalty somewhere else? But then you've got George maybe coming back through for second. And when Kimi takes the penalty at a Baku or somewhere else, he can't make it back through. So they're the debates that need to be played out there. And I can kind of see why you want to understand the kid and what is going to really help him to be at ease with the final run of races.
Do you think Mercedes will throw their weight behind him at some point in the second half of the year, prioritize him over George Russell?
They'll only need to when Ferrari stop making mistakes. If Ferrari get close, then they will support Kimi, because unless George is coming back into it. But at the moment, Hamilton's 50 points away. George is as much a threat as Lewis for the title. I don't see the need for Mercedes to even think about that right now. They're in control.
Well, JP, that's a nice segue into talking about Lewis Hamilton, P2 in the World Championship. Aside from that emphatic win in Spain, the opening half of the year feels like a series of missed opportunities, like you've just alluded to. You know, in Silverstone, Belgium, Hungary, he picked up four penalties across three weekends. Do you think if Ferrari stop making those mistakes, Hinch, that they can challenge Antonelli and Mercedes?
I think it takes a combination of them eliminating mistakes and Mercedes occasionally making one, because I think ultimately it's still the more complete package at the moment. You know, certainly Ferrari's done a remarkable job on their development. That said, we haven't seen a big package coming from Mercedes in a while, and one should be coming soon. And what does that do to the competitive order? You know, we've seen Red Bull take a big step. We've seen McLaren now take a big step and a Grand Prix win. But Mercedes is sort of out of sync with the upgrades. If their next one has the same level of effect and, you know, the same efficiency in terms of lap time, it's going to make it even more dire. So I think it's still a long shot. But you still do have a rookie. We don't know how he's going to react when it really gets down to crunch time. If that 50-point buffer does start coming down for some reason, does he start to panic? Does he start to drive in a protective manner? And does that create opportunities? It is possible. But yeah, I think Ferrari have to be flawless from here on out if they've got a realistic shot at it.
if you're Ferrari and you're sitting here with, let's say you blanked out the two names of the Mercedes drivers in the championship, you'd rather be chasing 50 points to Kimi, I think, in this form than George in Kimi's form. Because there is the unknown of what does he do when he gets towards a title fight. Whereas I think if George was driving like Kimi and was 50 points clear, I think we've seen enough from him in Formula One to know that he probably can keep delivering under a bit more pressure. But we don't know for Kimi. So I think you're right, Hinch, that Ferrari have to just keep the pressure on and see what happens. But I'm a little bit disappointed in them in recent races because I think they've just been given this chance with some reliability woes for Kimi. You know, the front wing or the wheel cover stuff in Silverstone was a really lucky strike for Ferrari. They were going to lose that race and they ended up coming through, taking a big dent out of Kimi's lead. And then they go and get all these penalties. So you've got a jump start for Lewis at Silverstone just because he moved his hand too quick. That's pretty sloppy. You've got him unlatching the pit lane speed limiter a fraction early in Hungary. It's hard to argue that's not pretty sloppy. You've got the bigger one of all of them, actually, probably being the impeding penalty in Hungary. My word, that's so sloppy from the race engineer at that point, and maybe a little bit from Lewis as well. And those three penalties may cost them just some points, obviously, but a little bit of momentum and a little bit of that pressure on Kimi. So they have to cut those out. The Spa one, I think, is unlucky. I think we probably all agree that that was a racing incident, that he was a bit harsh on the penalty. But
you use the word sloppy, all right? But do you think Hamilton's highs are still as high as they've ever been? Do you remember that run of races, Canada, Monaco, and then the amazing victory in Spain? Was that as good as we've ever seen?
I think he's driving brilliantly. I think the fact that he's even matching or ahead of Charles on pace a lot of the time shows what a great turnaround it's been. It's really difficult to compare to his glory at Mercedes, that the competition's so different, the environment's so different. I think we are seeing some of the best that he's ever done. And I think that's why the frustration at the needless penalties, because actually his driving level is exceptionally high right now. He's really risen to these regs and the opportunity that's there for him. But then these mistakes, they're not to do with skill. That's the silly thing. It's kind of a lack of concentration or, I don't know, attention or something in him and race engineer, and they've just let themselves down. And if Ferrari want to win this championship, we mentioned team orders before and the fact that they would need to maximize every point, they are a long way from doing that in the last few races.
And do you think in the coming races, which ones will favor Ferrari more than Mercedes?
I mean, Zandvoort's not a bad one. Just, shouldn't be the kind of power-sensitive track like we've seen Mercedes have a bigger advantage at. I mean, that's got to be one that they're circling. But same for McLaren, right? Just based on what we saw in Hungary. So it's, and who knows who's coming with what after the break. That's what's so fun about this first year of a rule cycle. Every weekend, the competitive order can switch depending on who brings what to the track. But certainly, I think, this coming weekend's a great shot.
Well, look, the trio at the top, we've discussed Antonelli, we've discussed Hamilton. Let's finally talk about George Russell. He's 59 points behind Antonelli, 9 behind Lewis. It's been a really challenging first half of the year. Do you think he's now on top of the car issues? Is he going to come back a more confident driver than the one that we saw last time out in Hungary?
I hope he's been able to go away and just reset. Literally, oh, I think he has with his big personal news over the summer. So hopefully he has been able to take his mind off racing just for a little bit. I think it's the perfect thing for him. When you're stuck in this run of difficult races, loads of pressure, all the question marks, what better than a proposal over the summer break just to think, I'm not even in racing mode right now. So, but I've been really thinking about what is going on with George. We've been talking about it for a few podcasts. So I've done some digging, guys. And I thought I'd have a look at the qualifying averages from the first half of this year and the second half of last year, or the last 10 races, to see what's going on. So George is, on average, just less than a tenth away from Kimi. Now, that's considerable. There's been a few times where he's actually got away with it in qualifying as well, when you think of Austria and the last lap. You think of Melbourne and the fact that Kimi had just crashed and was late to start qualifying. So it could have even been a little bit more. So then I was thinking, is this down to the regs or is it down to Kimi stepping up? Because he's so young and second year, you'd make a step. So I looked at last year and it's really interesting. There are two drivers this year that have made a massive step compared to their teammates on the second half of last year. That's Kimi and it's Lewis. So Kimi has made nearly 0.2 gain compared to George. So he was a little bit slower last year and he's turned it around to be a little bit quicker. He was a tenth down, now he's 0.08 up. Lewis was about 0.3 down last year. Now he's level, pretty much on pace with Charles overall. So huge steps. So you'd say for Lewis, he's a 7-time world champion. Is it understandable that Lewis could be motivated, find something, be more in sync with the car? I think it is. Then you look at the rest of the field. The gaps are so close, guys, compared to everyone else last year. So I'll give you a quick run through to complete my theory here.
So you've got a little Palmer analysis right in the middle of the show.
Here we go. I'll just throw it at you. Norris and Piastri, 0.07 difference to what it was last year. Gasly and Colapinto.
Is that all? I was expecting that to be more.
In terms of the swing between them. So Norris is 0.07 up. He was 0.14 up last year. 0.04 between Gasly and Colapinto. 0.01 between Stroll and Alonso. 0.07 between Sainz and Albon. 0.1 Behrmann has put onto Ocon. And Bortoleto and Hülkenberg is negligible. It's 0.03 difference and 0.06 total. So the gaps haven't really swung this year with the regs and the different driving style. But two drivers have really turned it round. Obviously, it's difficult to compare Max because he's got a new teammate and the same with Racing Bulls and Red Bull. But I thought that was interesting, having a look. So I think maybe it's more Kimi stepping up and Lewis having a complete bounce back than necessarily quirk of the regs. There you go. That's my thesis done.
That is a very interesting conclusion because I think initially I would have gone the other way. I would have just said new regs, different driving style. Lewis never really excelled in the ground effects car and it's just kind of come more to his natural style. But the data doesn't lie, does it? So, and it's interesting because it's not like you can understand Kimi as a, you know, coming from a rookie driver to a sophomore driver, finding that step, finding a bit of pace, right? That's pretty typical. I don't think the difference between Lewis's 19th and 20th season or whatever it is going to yield that same thing. So something's different. And if it's not the regs, is it just familiarity with the team? Is it finally having some say in the build of the car, regardless of what reg set it's in? You know, there are a few other contributing factors to it, but I would have thought there were more larger spreads throughout the teammates returning. So that is quite interesting. Ultimately, that tells you that Formula One drivers are good at driving Formula One cars, and regardless of the regs, they'll figure it out within a pretty small margin.
That's the difference in difference, by the way.
Yes, exactly.
Total difference.
Yeah. But
you know,
but I'm saying, because we talk a lot about how these regs, this type of car suits certain driving styles better or whatever. So I would have thought that there would have been a few examples of a much bigger difference from last year.
And that's why I was really surprised looking through to see if Colapinto's a couple of tenths away from Gasly. He's still a couple of tenths away from Gasly. If Bortoleto's a couple of hundredths up on Hülkenberg, he's still a couple of hundredths up on Hülkenberg. It's been really surprising. So it's just Hamilton and Antonelli are the massive outliers.
This episode is sponsored by Claude. Formula One is built on finding better ways to do things. Every tweak and upgrade is about improving performance, increasing efficiency, or saving valuable time. And that's an idea that goes far beyond the racetrack. Claude is the AI for minds that don't stop at good enough. It's the collaborator that actually understands your entire workflow and thinks with you, whether you're debugging code at midnight or strategizing your next business move. Claude extends your thinking to tackle the problems that matter. And Cowork brings Claude Code's agentic power to your desktop, no terminal required, so anyone can use and have Claude do real work. Point it to a folder on your computer or add connectors like Google Drive and Gmail. Describe what you need, and it handles the rest, like organizing files, building spreadsheets, or drafting reports from scattered notes. Queue up tasks and come back to finished work. And now with Dispatch, you can send tasks from your phone and Claude executes them on your desktop while you're on the go, Just imagine how much time that could save. You could even ask it to scan your Slack and emails every Monday and build you a prioritized action list rather than having to go through everything yourself. Ready to have an AI that can tackle real work? Try Claude Cowork today. Claude.ai/nation. That's Claude.ai/nation and check out Claude Pro, which includes access to all of the features mentioned in today's episode. Claude.ai/nation. This episode is sponsored by IM8. When it comes to looking after my health, one of the biggest battles I have is consistency. But the truth is, the easier something is to build into your day, the more likely you are to stick with it. That's one of the reasons I've kept using IM8's Daily Ultimate Essentials. It's a powder drink supplement co-founded by David Beckham and built by leading doctors and researchers. IM8 combines 16 supplements to support your body across 9 major organ systems, all in one drink. It feels good to know I'm doing something positive for my health every day without making it another thing to think about. And that's really the key, isn't it? You don't see the benefits from trying something once and hoping for the best. The real difference comes from turning it into a habit, and that's what IM8 has made so easy. In fact, a clinical trial conducted by the San Francisco Research Institute reported that 95% of people who tried IM8 for 12 weeks felt more energy. So if you're anything like me and know that consistency is often the hardest part, IM8 is definitely worth checking out. Go to im8health.com/nation right now or click on the link in the description and use the code NATION for a free welcome kit, 5 free travel sachets, plus 10% off your order. That's code NATION at im8health.com/nation. Code NATION at im8health.com/nation. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. This episode is sponsored by Indeed. Building a great team is never easy. If you're a small business, hoping the right people see your job posting isn't the best growth strategy. When the pressure's on and you need the right hire, this is a job for sponsored jobs. Indeed Sponsored Jobs gets you quality candidates when you need them most. Because when you're hiring, you don't just want more applicants, you want the right applicants. Sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed are 95% more likely to report a hire than non-sponsored jobs. That's because it helps you reach candidates that meet your specific criteria, such as skills, certifications, or location from the word go, boosting your job post in search results so you can reach the people that help your business thrive. So spend less time searching and more time actually interviewing candidates who check all of your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. When you need the right person to cut through the chaos, this is a job for Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? This is a job for Indeed Sponsored Jobs. Welcome back to another day. This episode has turned into a two-day record after workmen cut through the internet cables where I'm on holiday. And since then, Jolyon has shaved, Hinch has taken a plane, I, for continuity's sake, am wearing the same shirt as yesterday. I mean, Hinch, where are you now?
Well, I've had to relocate from my home in Indianapolis to Markham, Ontario for the IndyCar race this weekend. But TC, I'm not sure it was a continuity move. I think when you're on vacation, you just like sticking to one outfit and keeping it very easy when you travel. You travel light on vacation.
Busted. Yeah. Do you want to see what I'm wearing down?
No.
Yeah. Does lightning strike twice? I mean, let's get on with it in case those hammer drills go astray again. There are 546 points still up for grabs over the remaining races. So who else can challenge for the world title in 2026? We've talked about the top three in the table. Who else is still in the running, guys?
It's, as I've been saying for a day now, for 24 hours now, It's just, it's so hard to predict just because every week as a team brings a new set of upgrades, it does sort of change the pecking order. You look at what Lando did in Hungary, dominant win from pole, not just a win, but an absolutely crushing performance. It's, you know, in a newly upgraded McLaren, we know how good that team has been traditionally over the last, you know, 3 years, 4 years in terms of bringing upgrades and them working successfully. And if they can continue that pace of development, you know, we know that it's good at that type of track. We sort of spoke about how Zandvoort should be a competitive outing for them. Question marks are going to be, how does it do at a place like Baku? How does it do at a place like Monza? There are still, you know, some big question marks to come. But that, if you know, we're going off a data sample of one, but if that sort of pace and performance is repeatable, then, you know, Lando could certainly enter that conversation.
Well, both Lando and Charles Leclerc are within 100 points of Antonelli, closer to the leader than Max was at the same time last year.
That's our new benchmark for who could possibly win a title. If you could be within 100 points, then you never know by Abu Dhabi. I just think it's the top three for me. I don't see Charles getting there. I've said it for a while. I think he's lost too many points at the start of the year. And I don't see Lando getting there from this far off in the McLaren either. So I'm really impressed with what Lando's doing, actually. I was looking through, and probably four of the last five races, his performance has been almost faultless. And he won, obviously, in Hungary, delivering when the car was good. But when the car wasn't good, he was still getting points, got podiums. So I'm really impressed with him. But I think McLaren have left themselves too much work to do. The DNS is early on, the reliability problems that both drivers had. I don't see them coming back into this from this far back. But they can, of course, be a thorn in the side of an Antonelli, a Hamilton or a Russell.
While we're talking McLaren, I mean, let's a word on Piastri. Can he refind his form from, well, certainly from last year, or even early this year? He seems to have gone off the boil in the last five races.
I think it's very possible. You just look at the reverse situation a year ago, right, where it looked like Lando had sort of lost, you know, his stride a little bit, and Oscar was sort of dominating within the team. And then seemingly overnight, the power shifted, the dynamic shifted, and the momentum shifted in Lando's favor. I think the two are close enough that absolutely Oscar could find that form again and be a little bit closer to Lando or even ahead of him, you know, if he finds that kind of that perfect form.
The interesting thing for me on Oscar is when you look at his career against Lando, it was the first half of last year that he was immense, wasn't he? And he was putting in that run of form that we thought would lead him to a championship. Aside from that, he's now had sort of 3 years where he's been a little bit in the shadow of Lando, but with some good performances. So in 2024, he had a great couple of wins. But he was very much in the shadow of Lando. The year before that, he was a rookie and there was a lot more work to do. And this year, it feels again like he's fallen into the shadow of Lando. So I'm interested, more than having any answers right now, if Oscar can establish himself as the equal of Norris, or if he's just starting to fall back into the guy that can get close on a good day, but not necessarily be at the highs of Lando.
I mean, there's a massive difference in experience between Lando and Oscar. I mean, how long can we say, well, you know, Oscar's still fairly new, or do you think he's got enough miles under his belt now?
He's done loads, TC. He's done loads. He's year four now. He's fought for a championship. He's won countless race wins. He's taken pole positions. We've had reg change now that's obviously a test for everyone, but you can't always say the one with less experience is just less experience. It's factually true, but it's not an excuse. It's the same, you know, Leclerc's got less experience than Hamilton. It doesn't matter at a certain point.
Kimi and George, you know, where do we draw that line, right?
Mm. Look, on the topic of Leclerc, he was strong, first, second and fourth in the last three races, but he looked a little bit off in Hungary. Do you think he's going to come back confident that his car issues earlier in the year are behind him?
I think he's found a good form in the last few races. I mean, Hungary, he was a bit off, but you've got to remember that is a Lewis Hamilton track down to a T. So I think there will be an ebb and flow. We've already mentioned, you know, Lewis has made a huge step this year. They're on an even keel. So we need to sort of reset our lenses on what Charles should be capable of, probably. And I think he's getting back to a consistent place. So again, I don't think it'll be enough to mount a title challenge, but I think we'll see him probably finding another win, probably pushing more for wins and podiums regularly. And certainly that, just that slump of races, it looks like that is behind him.
Okay, we're going to Zandvoort this weekend. So we've got to talk about the home hero, Max Verstappen. First of all, bigger picture stuff with him. Three podiums in the last four races doesn't look too bad on paper, but he did describe that P2 in Hungary as unbelievable, as in, how did we do that? How far off are he and Red Bull? Do you think they're edging closer, or is it still quite a gap?
You know, the incredible thing with Max, it should have been four, because Silverstone, he was on for P3. And then he had the rear wing issue at Stowe. So it should have actually been four podiums in a row. The car isn't there, but Max is finding his feet now with the regs, I think. The Red Bull are obviously upgrading, and he's able to keep getting points. And I think he'll get victory chances, but some circuits will suit them more than others. And Budapest, he was horrible there last year. It was a terrible race. And this year, he's up in second place. So it shows actually the steps that they are making.
Well, it's so interesting, because we're in this part of the season, right, where people have figured out the basics of the new regs of the power units. They've started to bring upgrades, or not started. They're well into their, you know, their upgrade plans by this point in the season. But here's a little bit of Palmer's analysis for you, right?
Yeah, here we go.
I can't take credit for doing the hard work on this one. I came across this stat, but I thought it was really fascinating. Had the championship started four races ago, and everybody was where they were with their cars, the top six in the championship would be covered by 9 points. That is how even it has been over the last four races. So as everyone has sort of defined their feet, you know, you say three should have been four podiums for Max. Leclerc having podiums, won a race. Hamilton's won a race. Now Lando's won a race. It is truly impressive how much it's kind of come back and forth over that stretch. And 9 points would be the difference between the top six.
That's a good start. And it bodes really well for the rest of the year, doesn't it? Even if you've got the Mercedes guys and Lewis with the advantage, that's the threat, isn't it? That Max can beat them. That both McLarens can get in front, that Charles and Lewis can be there. It's not just Mercedes walkovers now.
Yeah, I think it's really great news for Kimi Antonelli, because with that many cars being competitive, they're taking points away from each other, and that buffer that he has now is just so much more valuable when you're not just kind of racing one or maybe two other guys.
Yeah, and on the subject of Max, do you think having a competitive teammate in Hadjar is well, keeping him honest, but also helping drive development? Or for the last few years, is Max the only one giving that kind of direction?
I can't imagine that Isaac Hadjar's having much say at all in what's going on at Red Bull still. I think he's done an impressive job to be close. I mean, he's now a couple of tenths away. So in the comparisons, that was, what, half a second solidly that Max had over any of his teammates, which has come down to two and a half tenths. So it shows the job that Hadjar's done and probably the less comfortable start of the season that Max has had. But if you're Red Bull, you're still following the lead of Max, aren't you? As impressive as Hadjar's been. Max is still the guy that's been on the podiums. Isaac's just waiting for it still. Max has been on the front row now a few times. He's been looking to have the highs that Isaac hasn't quite yet had. So they have to follow Max's lead, which has basically been the way they've operated now for nearly a decade.
But I think the good news in it is that, you know, Hadjar said recently that he and Max are giving the same feedback. So at least they're feeling the same things, and whatever direction Max can push the car, you know, Hadjar's feeling the same thing, and hopefully it's benefiting him in the same way. But yeah, you have to lean. And you ask any of those drivers that have come before Hadjar, and some came with a lot more experience, they'll all tell you they only ever listen to Max. That's just the deal over there, regardless of who's in the second car.
Well, the grandstands this weekend are going to be orange. Lando Norris, I guarantee, will say they're all Papaya fans, but we all know that they're there for Max. It's the sixth and final Dutch Grand Prix of the modern era at Zandvoort. Let's talk about that racetrack. I mean, Jolyon, you must have done quite a bit of racing there in your time. 4.2K.
Never.
Never.
I've only been round on foot or on a bike. Yeah.
I've actually raced at a European venue more than JP has.
And that was what, A1 GP back in the day?
That's right.
It?
Yeah, yeah.
God, good car
Hinch,
for it as
let
well.
Me let me throw that question at you. JP, I'm so surprised to hear you say that. Yeah, yeah. So, 72 laps, 4.2Ks. I'm guessing the track has been reworked since you raced it. But I feel the vibe is the same as it was when you were there.
Yeah, I mean, the vibe now, I'll be honest with you, this was a race I was supposed to work this year, but the IndyCar schedule changed. We added a race and I had to scratch it from the calendar, and I was absolutely gutted because I love going to the place. And obviously being there for A1, that was an incredible atmosphere. Can't imagine what it's like on Formula One weekend with Max on the grid. They've reprofiled that last corner since we raced there way back when, some 20 years ago now, TC. But no, fast, frantic, long corners, pretty physical, you know, because there's really only one straight of any note. So you're constantly cornering. It's going to be a tough one for drivers, tough on tires, but just requires some big commitment. And, you know, that first corner being banked, it's always fun for an overtake. You can make it work on the inside, make it work on the outside, like you see in the bowl. I think it's turn three, turn four, whatever they call it. Really quirky little place. But the atmosphere is just it's a 3-day party, isn't it? I mean, it's the Dutch know how to have a good time at a racetrack. So and yeah, knowing it's, that it's the last one, I think they're going to blow it out.
It's going to be noisy. Who's it going to suit, JP?
I think it'll be McLaren who will have a great chance again, just because of the sort of twistier nature of it. Mechanical grip's quite important. You've got the quirks, the undulations, the cambered corners. Obviously, you've thrown Mercedes in the mix, but I mean, it's so close now that it could you can't rule out Max. You certainly can't rule out Ferrari, who were very close to the front row as well they were on the front row, could have been on pole in Budapest. So it's really wide open. But I think, again, this has been a great track for Lando in recent years. So for me, he might even start this one as the favourite.
Wow. Well, look at the recent winners. You've had, what, Max, Lando, and then Oscar last year. It's a pretty exclusive club, just Red Bull and McLaren.
Yeah, and I was going to say that... So one of the like great bits of the job is to be going down to Parc Fermé to interview the drivers as soon as they take the helmet off. And when you're down there, you're obviously in Zandvoort, you've got this party atmosphere every day. Even on Thursday, the place is rocking. So you're down there. And I remember a couple of years ago, Max went provisional pole on the last laps, and you're waiting to see who's going to be in the top three. And the roar was something else. And if Max can do it this weekend, I think it'll be unbelievable scenes.
Well, it's a chance also for us to talk about some of the other runners. I mean, Racing Bulls and Alpine is a great little battle for P5 in the constructors, just the 5 points separating them at the minute. Alpine have a big upgrade package coming this weekend. They need it because RB have scored, what is it, in every race this year bar one. Hajar, of course, finished on the podium for Racing Bulls last year. How do you see that little scrap this weekend? Do you think RB will still have the advantage, or do you think Alpine might have enough?
It just sort of depends on this upgrade. You know, the last one they brought, I think of some substance, was Austria. It didn't quite pan out the way they were hoping. And I was speaking to Colapinto's engineer about how it just didn't give them quite as much performance as they were expecting. So if this one can kind of be that next step, it puts them back in the conversation. But you got to remember, I mean, the fact that RB just overtook Alpine in the Constructors' Championship last time out, that's off the back of Gasly having that podium in Monaco. So if you kind of take that outlier out, RB has been by far the more consistent, you know, team. I think both teammates have been contributing quite a bit to the points tally, where with Alpine, Colapinto has been closer to Gasly, but still not really to that point when the car was good. So I still think it's advantaged RB, unless this latest upgrade from Alpine is really something special.
And guys, remember Hajar was on the podium in that car last year. Obviously different regs, but they've always had a car that's good mechanically. And the same with the low speed circuits, like a Monaco, they go pretty well. Zandvoort is not that, but again, it's twistier in nature, which I think will suit them a little bit more as well. So I fancy them to stay ahead, at least this weekend. And it's a sprint. So it's a bold one, a sprint in Zandvoort to get all your upgrades absolutely singing by the time you get to qualifying even. So I think for Alpine, they can recover, but I fancy RB with the way they're going to keep the ball rolling this weekend.
This is a paid ad by BetterHelp. When you're younger, I think a lot of us imagine that at some point you're going to have everything figured out. That's part of growing up, right? Surely at some point the pressure eases up. Then you get a little bit older and you realize that point never actually arrives. And it doesn't help when you start comparing your life with everyone else's. The truth is, there isn't one set path for any of us. Plans change. Opportunities come along that you weren't expecting. Things don't always work out the way you'd hoped. You face setbacks, and sometimes you just have to work things out as you go. But that uncertainty isn't always easy to deal with, and having someone to talk things through with can really help. BetterHelp is one of the world's leading online therapy platforms, with more than 30,000 therapists worldwide and millions of people already served. And because life doesn't always run to a predictable schedule, BetterHelp offers flexible ways to connect that can work around different routines and lifestyles. You don't have to navigate life's challenges alone. Sign up and get 10% off at betterhelp.com/F1Nation. That's betterhelp.com/F1Nation. This episode is sponsored by Indeed. Building a great team is never easy. If you're a small business, hoping the right people see your job posting isn't the best growth strategy. When the pressure's on and you need the right hire, this is a job for sponsored jobs. Indeed Sponsored Jobs gets you quality candidates when you need them most. Because when you're hiring, you don't just want more applicants, you want the right applicants. Sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed are 95% more likely to report a hire than non-sponsored jobs. That's because it helps you reach candidates that meet your specific criteria, such as skills, certifications, or location from the word go, boosting your job post in search results so you can reach the people that help your business thrive. So spend less time searching and more time actually interviewing candidates who check all of your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. When you need the right person to cut through the chaos, this is a job for Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? This is a job for Indeed Sponsored Jobs. Now, look, there's two other teams I wanted to talk about on the show. One, Aston Martin, right? All eyes were on Aston in Hungary when they brought the aero upgrade. It gave them a massive jump forward. Alonso into Q2 for the first time this year. Honda are bringing the power unit upgrade this weekend in Zandvoort. I mean, how... Okay, it's not a power-sensitive track, but how high can they climb?
I mean, can they get towards... fighting for points? I'm expecting Honda, because they're starting from such a low baseline, they have a chance to make big strides here. And you've got to say, the chassis side delivered fairly well for Aston in Budapest. So it's a great test of mechanical grip and aero as well, because it's such a twisty circuit. You've got a nice flowing section in the middle. And again, I'm moving that forward to Zandvoort, I think it will work as well here. So then it depends how much Honda can improve, because some of the numbers still, that they were missing huge amounts of performance, even in Budapest, which again is not power sensitive. So I'm hoping that they can be fighting for some fringe points maybe even this weekend if the upgrade is as promised.
Hinch, do you think... it's fair to say that Aston will be the most improved team of 2026.
Yes, but I'm not sure that's necessarily a fair way of looking at it. You know, if
it's a pretty low bar.
When you start as poorly as they did, the only thing more shocking than how they started would be if they weren't the most improved team. after that. So yeah, for sure. They will be. They already are. That was such a massive jump in Hungary. And like you say, there's still more to come on the PU side and still more to develop on the chassis side. As we know, when you bring an upgrade, you don't figure the whole thing out and unlock every bit of performance in one go. And they had such a massive, list of things that they brought. There's lots of optimization still to be done there. So I expect to see more out of the car itself. And then obviously we all wait to see what the PU has.
And I wonder how much Alonso needs to see before he commits to 2027 with that team. I mean, I think he had a bit of a smile on his face in Hungary, didn't he? How much does he need to see from Honda to commit for one more year?
I think if JP's right and they can be flirting with points, within the next couple of rounds, again, that level of development and progression, you can see the graph now. And if you're Alonso, you can say, okay, now Newey's been here from the get-go. Honda figured out the early issues. We know that they're capable of building championship-winning engines. We know that Adrian's capable of building championship-winning cars. So if you can see that the process is working and the progress is there, I think that could be enough for him to sign back up.
I mean, they're currently P10 in the Constructors' Championship. I'd say Williams look very vulnerable to be overtaken by Aston. They're P9, even Audi in P8 if they don't start maximizing what they've got. I mean, I am fascinated to see how part two of this season plays out for Aston Martin.
If Aston can even climb above 10th, it'll be an incredible recovery. Given where they've been at, and they've not been even... The fact they've even got a point now is miraculous. So it's incredible. If they can dream of adding they need to get double digits to get beyond and then hope that no one else scores. So feels a long shot, but you never know. And with the season being so long, they've got chances to upgrade again. It would just be an unbelievable turnaround. And I don't think Fernando's survived this brutal first half of a year for him to pack it in now. Surely he's keeping his head up because he knows, let's go again and let's at least finish racing in Formula One.
Right, finally, can we talk Cadillac? Formula One never sleeps, not even during an enforced summer shutdown. And the news from Cadillac is that they've brought in Marcin Budkowski as team principal, replacing Graham Loudon just 6 months into the team's debut season. Guys, love both of your thoughts. Hinch, why don't we start with you? How has that news been received in the US?
I think very positively. I think when you, in the same way we were just talking about Aston, starting from fairly low and making big gains early, when you have a new program, a new rules package, a new anything, those big gains are kind of easy off the top, or they're bigger gains, early on. And I think we're kind of seeing that with the team as a whole. And so I think everybody's excited that there are changes being made to try to improve the competitiveness of the team. Everybody sort of agrees that they exceeded expectations and how they kind of showed up in the first part of the season. But showing up is not why they're going racing, right? They're going racing to win eventually. And so changes at some point have to be made, and big gains hopefully can be made, early in this project.
Well, let me give you a resume of what Marcin has done in Formula One. He's been in and around the sport for 25 years. And on the face of it, he has all the experience that Cadillac would want. He's an aerodynamicist by trade, having worked for Prost, Ferrari and McLaren. He's also had regulatory experience with the FIA, where he worked between 2014 and 2018. He's an exact contemporary of Laurent Mekies, actually, who was at the FIA at the same time. And both of them were key figures behind the introduction of the Halo in 2018. Marcin then became executive director and team principal of Alpine between 2018 and 2022. And more recently, he's got experience of the media as a pundit for Polish TV. So there isn't an area of the business that he hasn't touched, which has to be valuable, JP, for a team in its first season, right?
I think his experience across the board and in big teams as well, and in the FIA, is valuable especially to Cadillac. So when you look at Graham Loudon's experience, you said it, Hinch, they've shown up and they've done a solid job. And that is Graham Loudon's experience. When he turned up with Virgin and Marussia, and they turned up and they were on the grid and established Formula One team. But I think with Cadillac, they obviously are more ambitious than Marussia were. And Martin is a guy that seems to have a lot of experience. I don't really know him too well, but to be at the helm of Alpine just after I left them, so I didn't cross paths with him, but it's great experience for him in a bigger team, a big organization backed by Renault. So it'll be fascinating to see if they can progress. And I still look at their pit wall when you get the shots of Cadillac, and they've had a lot of things, basic things go wrong, which I think will be frustrating the management there. Brake cooling being a perennial issue, suspension failures, just sort of basics that have been teething problems that have cost them track time and then chance to develop the car as well, because you're fixing parts, you're eating into the cost cap. But every time you see one of those things, you pan to the pit wall and you see Pat Simmons, you see Nick Chester, and you think they've got some technical expertise already. So adding Martin, I think, can be a good thing for them. And again, hopefully we'll see a few more strides, because if Aston Martin are going to make this step forward, they are going to leave Cadillac alone at the back, and suddenly the attention will turn a bit more to them.
Oh, and Martin is going to be reunited with Chief Technical Officer Nick Chester, with whom he worked at Renault. So he can hit the ground running with people like that. And actually, he was a year ago, almost exactly, he was on F1 Nation with me reviewing the Dutch Grand Prix. And he does speak very well, very knowledgeably. He's worked with people like Oscar Piastri in the past at Alpine. So I'm excited
for
him.
I'm a little... We keep plugging away and we speak well. Maybe we'll get a chance at a TP shot.
I'm a little bit surprised. Guys, I'm a little bit surprised at the timing. I think Graham has even acknowledged he's the sort of, there are different phases in the life of a Formula One team, and perhaps the guy who starts the whole thing isn't the person to take it on, you know, to win Grand Prix. But I 6 months seems pretty sharp.
It's 6 months of this year, but it's 3 years of the project, right? I mean, Graham's been with the organization for quite a while, and I think that's a very valid statement, right? There are going to be different phases, and to JP's point, Graham's strength was he's done this before, start a team from scratch and get it on the grid. I think the important thing to remember about timing is that 2027 has already started. And if you try to wait until season's end to, you know, bring in the next person, if that was the goal, you're already sacrificing 2027, and that person doesn't really have a true influence, at least their own full control, until 28. I don't think they want to wait that long. I think there's an understanding that, you know, 27 starts now, and we want to be in a better position 12 months from now than we are currently, and that necessitates, you know, change sooner.
Yeah, it's a shame for Graham Loudon, I think, who hasn't had a great opportunity to show what he can do when the team's up and running. But it is a signal of intent, isn't it, from the team that have got two experienced drivers. I mentioned the pit wall guys as well, loads of experience, and now a sort of technical expert at the helm. So I think it's good to see ambition from Cadillac.
All right, well, guys, thank you for the last 2 days. Actually,
what an endurance podcast.
Let's do some podium predictions now. Let's have a sprint winner and top three for Sunday's race.
Okay, sprint winner. I'm going to go George. I'm going to say, you know, one practice. They still, I think, have the most sorted package. Brake's been good for him. Good personal news on his side. He's refreshed. He's recharged. And then I do think, just again, looking at statistics and having the short memory that you have to have in motorsports, I think Lando wins the race, and I think he wins it from Kimi and Lewis. No, I take it back. I take it back. We got to have Max on the podium. He wins it from Kimi and Max.
All right. Actually, just on a point, the cars being a bit narrower. You guys said earlier how it's, you know, it's a narrow, old school track. Does that help overtaking, or are the margins are the margins too small when it comes to narrower cars?
Fractionally better, maybe, but...
Yeah, okay, because they're fractionally narrower, yeah.
It's about the way that they can follow each other. This circuit I'm excited for, because I think it's a great... Zandvoort is a great advert for what you can do with a classic track to make it raceable in modern Formula One. It's not super power sensitive. Overtake mode should be quite helpful. The cars should be able to follow a bit closer. I'm hopeful we'll get more great racing. And it's been a good racetrack as well. I think Norris wins the sprint. I think Norris starts well, wins the sprint. I'll go. I'll go Kimi wins the Grand Prix from Lando and Max. I agree with the top three. I think that's the top three. TC?
I'm going to chuck Ferrari in there. I'd agree with you guys. I think Norris is going to carry on where he left off before the summer break. I think he'll win the sprint and I think he'll win the Grand Prix. But I'm going to throw in Leclerc and Hamilton. I think Ferrari are going to be really strong. I think Leclerc will be ahead of Hamilton, actually. He's always been really, really good at Zandvoort. He's had a couple of podiums already. So I think it's going to be Ferrari, you know, getting their mojo back.
No Mercedes on the podium.
No Mercedes. Well, Mercedes, I know it's completely different regs, but Mercedes over the last 5 years haven't had a stellar record at Zandvoort. I know they've got the dominant car, but I just think what we saw from McLaren last time out was too strong. And I think this is a Ferrari kind of track.
Well, that'll change the conversation by the time we turn up to Monza then, if that's the case.
Come on, and then that'll be perfect. Leading into Monza, where we're obviously going to have a Ferrari 1-2, right?
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Well, guys, thanks again. Great to see you both after the holes. Go well over there in Canada, Hinch.
Thank you very much.
And JP, see you on the ground.
I'll get another lap on foot going just to build up that bank of knowledge for the next year's podcast.
Should we run it?
Let's do it.
I mean, let's seriously do it. We talk about this a lot, but I think we should do it.
Thursday night, track run night. It's a short lap.
Okay. I'm preparing for a half marathon, actually. So,
you'll do 15 laps, will you?
Yes. All right, guys. Well, look, in selected countries, you can watch all the racing at Zandvoort on F1 TV and on Apple TV in the US. And you'll hear Jolyon on commentary as well. And you can keep across all the action at F1.com, the F1 app, and at F1 on social media. My guest on this week's F1 Beyond the Grid podcast is 1996 world champion Damon Hill, who reflects on his title success of 30 years ago. And what I found particularly fascinating about our chat was how he picked himself up after a very disappointing campaign in 1995. Lots of lessons there. That show's out on Wednesday, and you can watch our chat on the F1 YouTube channel. So please do check that out. But thank you very much for listening, and we will, of course, be back on Monday with our review of the Dutch Grand Prix. So we'll speak to you then. F1 Nation is produced by Formula One and Audio Boom Studios. This episode is sponsored by Honda. Since its first Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix, Honda has always taken what's learned on the track and used it to build better cars for everyone. From pushing limits in F1 to engineering the next generation of hybrids like the Prelude Hybrid and Civic Sedan Hybrid, Honda proves that racing doesn't just inspire innovation, it drives it. And that idea of taking lessons from the racetrack and applying them to road cars has always been a part of Honda's DNA. Decades of engineering in the demanding world of Formula One have helped shape the performance and efficiency you see in Honda's road cars today. And now that same thinking is shaping the next generation of hybrids as well. Cars like the 2026 Prelude Hybrid and Civic Hybrid show that electrification can be both efficient and genuinely fun to drive. The 2026 Prelude Hybrid and Civic Sedan Hybrid are engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Prelude and Civic and the latest innovations at Honda.com.
Stop the podcast!
Stop the podcast!
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV Licensing.
Yes, TV Licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids, some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.